Okay, I think we're just about ready to get started now. So my name is Brad Sullivan. I'm a program manager for the Visual Studio Debugger. Today I'm just going to be talking to you a bit about some of the extensibility points that we have in the VS Debugger. So first thing that I'm going to go through is going to be about extending the data visualization capabilities that are already in the Visual Studio Debugger. So first I'm going to show some native, and then I'm going to show what we have on that side for managed. Then I'm going to jump into showing you what we have for automating the debugger, how you can control the debugger through our automation model. And then I'm going to gloss over some advanced topics, such as integrating a debugger engine, things at that level. Not going to go too deep into those advanced topics, since those are things that tend to only be useful in very long talks and one-on-one sessions, because it's not extremely simple to do. So I said I was going to start with native. Out of curiosity, how many people here use native, let's say, at least 25% of the time? So there's a few of you, okay. And how many use managed at least 25% of the time? So overlapping sets. Okay. So our native story for extending the data visualization today is through a file that comes with Visual Studio that's named autox.dat. So it's located under Common 7 Packages Debugger in your installation path. And it's loaded every time you start debugging. So it's on the debug session. It's loaded as opposed to on VS startup. So if you're editing this autox.dat file, you can do so without needing to restart Visual Studio all the time. It has two sets of rules in it for data visualization. And I'll be showing you some of those in a second. One is a set of auto expand rules, and the others are visualizer rules. We call it self-documenting. It's another way of saying it's otherwise undocumented. But the examples inside, plus the comments, can help you figure out how to do these for your own objects. So as I mentioned earlier, the auto expand rule is the first section of rules. That's kind of the old way to do it. It's been around for at least VS 2003, probably several iterations before that. Essentially, it's just a way of saying for one particular object type in a single line what that should be formatted as when you're reviewing that in the watch window. Visualizer rules were introduced in 2005. They're a little bit richer, and they allow you to do things like define what the child elements are going to look like as well. So why don't I give an example here to start? So as you all know, Beta 2 of Visual Studio 2010 was first made available today. And so I'm going to be doing all of my demos inside of Beta 2. So I've created a simple native application here. And what it does, I have a class, Sifu, with a couple members. And I just create an instance of one. And so we can just look at what that looks like in the debugger. So in the debugger, under our autos window here, I was looking at this earlier. I think you can barely see it from the back. Might just need to squint a little bit. So you can see that it displays the member variables, and it's not that bad. And then when you expand it, you can see the children. So what autox.dat does is, let's open this file. So I actually have this file pre-opened, and I did that because since autox.dat is stored in your installation location, that's generally going to be under program files, and program files is a protected location, and as such, you need to edit it with something with admin permission. So I have an admin notepad here that I'm going to be editing this with. So first is in this file, we have this auto expand section. And I already have a line defined here for Sifu that I've commented out. So I'm going to uncomment that. And what it has is essentially everything that you type out, it's going to display as is. And everything that's in the angle brackets is going to be evaluated. And the result of that evaluation is going to display instead. So I'm going to say MA equals the value of MA, MB equals the value of MB. And then for the fun of it, I'm also going to show double MA equals MA times 2. So let's save this guy. Restart the debugging session so it reloads autox.dat. And you can see that that now it's showing me the new format that I had defined in that file. So that's better. I can get a little more data out of it. But I can do better if I use the more advanced visualizer section. So I'm going to comment that one back out. And then I'm going to scroll down here. I have this predefined in a text file. So I'm going to copy this over. Okay, so now what you can see is there's a preview section and there's a children section. So the preview section is the root node, essentially, of how it's going to display in the watch window. And then I can define children individually. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to define M of A and is, you know, the expression, the current expression dot MA. I'm going to do the same for MB. But then I'm going to define two other things in the children that might be useful information while debugging and without, you know, wanting to go somewhere else and do the math. So I'm going to define a child called product and a child called sum that multiply and sum up the those variables. Okay, so if I stop debugging here, debug again. So now, parent I just defined is the string sifu, and the children, we've got MA, MB, product, and sum. So that's pretty much the extent of what you're able to do on the native side when it comes to modifying how this data is going to display without going so far as to adding your own tool windows or doing anything like that. So I'm going to shift over to manage now. And manage, there's a couple things that I'd like to show. So the first is how to use the system.diagnostics attributes. So there's a set of three attributes that we have that you can set on your manage types that define how they're displayed in the watch windows. So the first one is debugger display, and that literally controls just how that class is displayed. It's equivalent essentially to overwriting the toString function for that object, except if you wanted to use the toString function for something besides debugging, you still have that capability. Debugger browsable determines if a member and how a member is displayed. So for example, if you have duplicated data, and when you expand it in one of the watch windows, you're getting a lot of garbage, this is a good way to filter that out. And the last one is the debugger type proxy, where you can essentially define a second object, a second type, and your first type that you're actually looking at the data will be expanded as the second type. And so that will give you really full control over what it's going to look like. So obviously, to do this, these are attributes. You're going to need to be editing the code. So this is something that you can do only really with your objects, as opposed to something you're getting from somebody else's library. So let's open up Visual Studio here. I'm going to stop debugging, and I'm going to switch projects to a managed project. Okay, so we've got that guy up, and this project has a type that I've defined. It's called a heavy rectangle. So it's a rectangle, meaning it has a height and a length, but this rectangle also has a density, so that it could have some weight to it. So I have these attributes defined for the different members of this object. And the first thing I'm going to show you is the debugger display. So let's uncomment that out. So as you know, when you just view an object in the watch window and it's collapsed, you're going to see the result of the toString, which just is going to return the type for you. So let's say that the weight of this heavy rectangle is the most important data for you. We can just set that weight to be what is displayed. Essentially, what we're putting in curly braces here is an expression, and the rest of it is just text. So you just go debugger display, and then that expression for what you want to see. So let's debug this. And now we can see R, which is of type heavy rectangle. Let's expand that. And you can see its weight is 300,000. Great. So now when we expand it, since we're using properties and we're getting a lot of duplicated data, so I get density twice, height twice, length twice, and that's causing a lot of clutter. It's eating up a lot of screen real estate, especially if you imagine I had 10 or more of these. It's not really going to help you. You also notice that I have something called useless array, which is not actually used in the object, but just to demonstrate what happens with an array. And you know, on a single line, I have int 5, and that's not very interesting. It's only interesting when it's expanded for me. So one thing that I can do is, let's stop debugging here, go back to our heavy rectangle, is now I'm going to use the debugger browsable. And for the properties, I'm going to set debugger browsable never. And so it's just not going to show up in that watch window. So I'm going to do that for all three of the properties, height, length, density. And now for useless array, let's say I always wanted to see that expanded. It was never of any use to me, collapsed. I can say show that root hidden, and that will show it always expanded. So if we F5, look at that, expand this, It's less cluttered here at the top. We just get the 3, the 250, the 400. And you can see the array is expanded without the root shown. Okay, so the real power in showing the custom managed visualizers. So you may have seen while you're debugging, if you have text, HTML, XML, a data set, or now new in Visual Studio 2010, a WPF object. When you're evaluating that object in your watch window, in your data tip, wherever you're looking at it, you see a little magnifying glass. And that magnifying glass, you can click on it, and it launches a new dialog that visualizes that object in a customized way. Has anybody here used the new WPF visualizer in Visual Studio 2010? I know you have, but... if you do any WPF programming whatsoever... It's definitely worth taking a look at. So those visualizers, anybody can create them. It's really fast. It's managed only, and you get a complete solution for just retrieving that object, showing it in the dialog you want. And if you really want to, you can have your window able to edit the object, and send that right back into your debuggy process with updated data. So steps to create one are pretty easy. I'm going to show it to you in a couple minutes. So the first thing to do is just create a new class library. You add a reference to the Microsoft Debugger Visualizers DLL. And then from there, you'll need to extend the dialog debugger class. You add an assembly attribute that will tell Visual Studio what object you're visualizing and what class is visualizing it. And you add a little code when you're implementing the interface. There's only one method that you need to implement. It's a show method. And you build it and deploy it to one of two locations, and Visual Studio will automatically just pick it up. So the two locations, there's one under documents, so that's per user only. So that visualizer will only work for you on that machine. And then there's another location in the full install. So what I'm doing when I do this is I deploy it to the per-user location, and I actually just build it directly into that per-user location. And then when you're done, you can move it over to the protected location in the install route. Okay, so for this heavy rectangle visualizer, heavy rectangle class, so essentially, in the same project, in the same solution, rather, I created a new project, also called Heavy Rectangle Visualizer, and it's a class library. And so first thing, is you create this new class here, and I can actually... I have my class saved. So I'm just going to copy that. All right. So here are the things that I've added. So first you add the reference to the assembly that you need. So that's the Visual Studio visualizers. You have the class implement the dialog debugger visualizer. And then the only method you need to implement in there is the show method. So the show method, all my show method here is doing is it's creating a new form and showing it. So I'm also passing the form this object provider. So the object provider is how you actually get and set the data for the object you're visualizing. So let's so one thing I can also show here is that on this this visualizer, if you look at the build settings, I've just set it. It's grayed out now because I'm running, but I just set it to build directly to that visualizer's path so that it's picked up every time without me having to do any manual file swapping during the while debugging. So, okay. So now that I've done that, I've got, I see this guy, which is my heavy rectangle, and it's got this magnifying glass. So you click on the magnifying glass, and it'll tell you which visualizers are available. There's only one available, the one I just created. So this is my wind form. So it's displaying the rectangle and its size, and it's showing me the properties. Its height is 250, length 400, density 3. And I also mentioned that you can edit these values. So I created a button, and all this button does is it decreases the density by one every time you click it. So now I've made the density 0. And just to show that that's picked up by the app, you can now see in the watch window that the weight of the of that object is now 0. So if I go to my form here, it's pretty easy. It's, you just decrement the density, then called your object provider, replace object, give it your new object, and it'll be picked up by the debuggy. Okay, so that moves us past the visualization section. Now I'm going to start talking a little bit more about our automation model and what you can do what you can do to extend the debugger using this model. So the DTE debugger object is available, to use in your plugins. You can use it out of process entirely. It's just part of the DTE that you're using for any other Visual Studio extensibility. We primarily use it through macros, and so it's our one excuse to program in Visual Basic, I guess, for the debugger team. But using this through the macros is a little bit easier. The object is already there. You don't need to try to go find the object in a different process or anything like that. And the experience is already well integrated into Visual Studio. So we have sample macros that ship with Visual Studio. We also created several more, and there's blog posts about different things that we've done with macros, and I'll show you a few of those in a minute. So the DTE debugger object can be used for process control. You can launch your app. You can attach the debugger, detach, terminate the application. Almost all of the things that you normally do in the debugger, although not everything, can be automated this way. So your execution control, stepping, continuing, stepping over, running to cursor, all that stuff is there. Data inspection, looking at the locals, walking through what's on the call stack. You can modify your debug settings. So if you had a set of a preferred debug settings, you could create a macro that sets them all the way you like, and you just run that. Or let's say you have two sets of settings that you like. You can just create two macros to toggle between the two. You can get the debugger status, what it's doing with process threads, some other things like one thing that I'll show you is using it to write a mini dump. And unfortunately, we only have one new thing in Visual Studio 2010, and it's related to the breakpoints. And so you can import and export breakpoints using the same automation model. So with that, I'm going to come back to Visual Studio, and I'm going to show you a few of our macros here. Okay. So generally, you pull up the macros through Tools, Macros, and then either Macro Explorer or Macro IDE. I'll start through Macro Explorer here. So let's take a look at this guy, actually. So this is the Macro IDE. It looks pretty similar to Visual Studio. You can debug in it, set breakpoints, do all that regular stuff. It's not quite as rich as, you know, a full project. So I just went jump to this add breakpoint to main. And essentially what I'm doing is I'm creating a new BP and a new set of BPs. And I am adding a named breakpoint to main in this and to this set of BPs, and then I'm going through and I'm tagging all the BPs in my collection. So debugger breakpoints add is how you're going to be adding a breakpoint if you wanted to do that through this automation model. So if we run that, I'm already in main. You can see that this breakpoint jumps in there. Another interesting one would be this guy attached to paint. So let's say I had paint running. Now it's running. I can get my list of local processes from the debugger and go through each of the processes and check to see if their name matches MS Paint. And then if so, proc.attach will attach me there. So if I run this one and I go to debug Windows processes, you can see that I'm now attached to MS Paint. So I'm going to detach from there. So, you know, running macros in that way is somewhat interesting. You know, if you had a set tasks that you want to do as you're, you know, as you're already stopped, you know, there are several things you can do there. However, it's more interesting to actually use uh, it's more interesting to actually be at an event when you're running this macro and automating the debugger. So there's a set of events that you can catch and handle and then do everything in that specific context. So for example, on context changed, or when the debugger enters break mode, if there's a set of things you want to do, you can do them then. When you're entering design mode, when you're entering run mode, when an exception is not handled, or when an exception is thrown. And when the exception is thrown, you do make sure have to make sure that you have the setting that the debugger knows when that exception is thrown. So there's other debugger events as well. They're organized differently within the IDE. So there's the on-expression evaluation and when the process state has changed. So I'm going to show you how to do that. So I'm going to go into the macro IDE. And what you want to do is you want to go under My Macros, and you'll always have this guy here that's Environment Events. So if I go to Environment Events, you will see, well, I have a private function in here that's not doing anything, but you'll see I have this this guy here that says Debugger Events on Exception Not Handled. So you can, So this macro is going to run whenever there's an unhandled exception. And if you read through what it's doing here, so it's getting the debugger object, and then it's calling write mini dump. It's giving it a specific location and a mini dump options, and that mini dump option is dbg mini dump dump normal, or mini dump normal. So if we go ahead in this application and uncomment this line, we can remove that there. So my macro ran. One of the first thing it does is it pops a message box that says exception unhandled. And so I've got that file folder here. You can see that it's empty. But if you continue that, now I'm actually hitting the unhandled exception, and my dump is in that folder. So that so now I have this already set up, so I don't have to think about it later, so that whenever I'm getting an unhandled exception, I'm already getting a dump out in case I want to save that for later. So if we go back to the macros IDE here, the way you can choose which events, first you choose the category. So we're looking at debugger events. And let's say I want to handle on enter design mode. So it'll give me a little stub here that will already fill out all that those arguments, so I can just create my macro for whatever I want to do in the debugger when I'm entering design mode. So let's let me get this macro right here, and what it's doing is it's getting the set of BPs, all of the BPs. And then it's iterating through the EPs, and it's saying BP enabled equals true. So essentially, it's taking all of the disabled breakpoints and it's re-enabling them. So I'm going to paste that right in there. Save that. Now if I go back to my development environment, let's say I had a bunch of breakpoints here, Let's comment this guy back out, actually. And now let's start debugging. And let's disable this one as well. So you can see two of the breakpoints are currently disabled. But when I go back to design mode, they're once again all enabled. Okay, so that's pretty much where we are for the debugger automation. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the basic debugger architecture and advanced topics. Then we'll have some Q&A, and there'll be more Q&A at the Ask the Experts after this. If we get out of here a little early, I'm sure nobody will mind. It's last talk of a pretty long day. So essentially, this is slightly simplified, but the debugger architecture is in a few layers. So at the top, we have the debugger UI. And so that's everything that you're interacting with, whether it's the glyphs that are showing up in the editor when you're setting a breakpoint, or the individual windows like the watch windows or the threads windows that are getting data. And those are communicating with the session debug manager, which is like a multiplexer of debug engines. And the session debug manager talks to several debugger engines that are installed with Visual Studio. So there's the native debug engine for C++. There's a single managed debug engine for all of the .NET languages. There's a script debug engine for JScript debugging, and a SQL debug engine for T-SQL debugging. Those are the guys that are doing all the work. They do all the execution control, essentially. Everything that you would really think of as the debugger that's not the UI. Talking to the managed debug engines are the expression evaluators. So there's a C# expression evaluator, a VB expression evaluator, and you can actually create any number of expression evaluators. So if you have your own managed language, this is the best option for getting full integration in the debugging experience in Visual Studio. The expression evaluator, it's responsible for parsing the expressions that you give it in any window, and including things that are on the call stack, evaluating those expressions, and determining what the locals are for the current frame. So the default experience is actually provided by the C# expression evaluator. So if you have a managed language and you do not install a separate expression evaluator, Visual Studio will try to use the C# expression evaluator. And sometimes it actually doesn't do that poorly. So it might be a good enough experience. If you're interested in creating your own expression evaluator, there is a sample provided in the Visual Studio SDK, as well as a deep dive walkthrough. And I provided the link to the walkthrough there. That'll walk you through what it takes to create one of these. So if that solution doesn't work for you at all, and let's say you have your own platform or runtime entirely, then the answer might be to create your own debug engine and get that to talk to the SDM. So that is a lot of work. Certainly if something is working, let's say, in .NET, the expression evaluator is a much simpler solution, but there are times when a custom debug engine is the only real solution. So debug engine here would need to handle attaching, detaching, all the execution control, all the module and thread enumeration, all the call stacks, a lot more. It's many, many weeks worth of work. But there are people who do it. We also do ship a debugger engine sample. And it's not a full sample. It doesn't do everything, obviously. But it's enough to get anybody started if they are interested in integrating a debug engine. And I've included a link to where you can find that example. So with that, I think I'll just open it up to Q&A. Is there any questions people have? Yes. So I guess it was a two-part question. So the first part was it's about the limitation in visualizing arrays. So the experience in viewing arrays hasn't changed between Visual Studio 2008 and 2010. But if there are specific types that you are looking for, you should still be able to. Well.
So I mean, it's like an online thing. People are trying to do visualizers for things like byte arrays and can't.
Oh, I see. Arrays. Okay. So not truly a custom type, but those limitations still stand. I don't believe so, no. Any other questions?
Yes. Are there any major changes in the way the SDM talks to debug engines in regards to the interfaces?
No, the 87 interfaces, I believe is what you're referring to, are virtually all the same. So it would be a different major release before we re-architect the way different debug engines plug in.
Shipping
that integration is really difficult. It's not something that you could easily patch. But that's actually something that we're looking at pretty seriously for the next major release is how we want to get the native visualization experience at least on par with the native, in terms of both capabilities and a deployment story for partners. We'd certainly be interested in getting your feedback and seeing what you're doing so we make sure that your requirements are being met there. So is it possible to do a custom visualizer? I see. So probably Probably not without a decent amount of work. I think, you certainly could with a custom with your own window, but getting that integration into the watch windows, for example, would be harder. So let's see. I'm going to have somebody else think about that one as well and see if they have any bright ideas on how that might work. Through the watch window right now, I'm not sure it would. The machinery that actually allows that to display is done by the managed languages teams themselves and not directly through the debugger. There are people on my team that we regularly do, in-depth dives on with custom debug partners who are creating custom debug engines with, because it does require that deep dive generally. So I can be the liaison for you. Anything else? All right. Well, I'll see you all at the Ask the Expert session. It's just over a couple of rooms. Thanks.